Hello everybody, my name is Ron, and this is Ron's Gadget Talk for Thursday, 2nd of September, 2021. Yes, our first September episode of this year. You could say, wow, we're literally, well, we are halfway across this year, almost. We made it, guys. It's been a bit tough, but we made it to the end, and it's been great. But yeah, in today's episode, we've got a lot of things to talk about, as always. Like Microsoft doing an event for its new Surface devices later this month, along with more details about the Galaxy S21 Fan Edition, or FE, as most will call it, and the Vivo X70 series, plus, and we're gonna talk this after the Surface stuff, a new Bluetooth codec that Qualcomm's made that allows you to listen to lossless music on your earbuds, and much more. Before I start, I'm just gonna say this, and that is Sony should make another portable handheld. Really, just to compete with the upcoming Steam Deck and the Nintendo Switch. I get it, the PS Vita failed because it had a proprietary storage, it had limited game library in that sense. It didn't have that many games for what it is, and if you looked at it in a hard way, it had quite limited functionality compared to an iPad. Sony could succeed this time, but then frankly, if you're novice enough, you can get an Xperia phone, download the Remote Play app that connects your phone to your PS4 and 5, and you can sort of play that, and turns the phone into a Sony handheld. Oh well. I mean, smartphones and tablets have become quite a common device to play games on that handhelds have no place unless they're just high performance, you can do more with it, like the Switch and or the Steam Dock or Deck. I don't know how you pronounce it still. Aside from that quick introspection, so without further ado, let's just simply get rolling, shall we? After announcing the launch date of Windows 11, Microsoft is doing an event where they will show off new Surface devices on September 22nd. What should we expect from the Redmond folks? All new Surface Pro 8, which should feature 11th gen Intel processors, a high refresh rate display, a removable M.2 SSD port, and much, much more. Alongside the Pro is the Surface Go 3, the more affordable sibling of the Surface line, which should feature a choice of the latest Pentium or Core i3 processors with 4 GB of RAM. This tidbit of information has come from a Geekbench score, which was leaked of the Go 3, showing the scores, which meant it might have a Pentium processor or a Pentium Gold processor or a Core i3. With that much RAM, and it could start at $399, which is pretty competitive nonetheless. But aside from the new Surfaces, we've talked about the Surface Duo 2 on Tuesday's episode earlier this week, and we know some of the specs here. I'll repeat them here in case you missed it. You've got a Snapdragon 888 processor with up to 8 GB of RAM and a rear triple camera setup, hopefully some inner dual screen displays with high refresh rates. Now I'm gonna point this out here, this is what makes the Surface Duo unique. It's not a foldable, they're not exactly foldables, but I believe it's easier to design and manufacture for Microsoft themselves, and hence they're able to offer it as it is. Yeah, easily a step up from the original, which had almost yesteryear specs for $1,400 when it came out last year. I stated earlier last year that the original Surface Duo is good for corporate/power users, you could say, and not for casual high-end smartphone users. But if they offer it at around $800 to about $1,000, it'd be quite suitable for most smartphone users. And again, it's not a folding phone, but it's got most of the utility and functionality nonetheless. One thing we need to look out for really is whether they'll be offering an ARM-based Surface device. Why did I say a chip? A device, obviously, the Surface Pro X 2 or something like that, but we're in a big chip shortage, and I believe they'll probably be just revealing the Pro 8 and the Go 3, given the current circumstances. Along with that, one thing we need to look at also is whether any of the Surface devices will be getting optional LTE or 5G support. They've been Wi-Fi only, and there's an LTE variant for the previous ones, but again, will the Surface Pro 8 or the Surface Go 3 offer either LTE or LTE and 5G support? Again, We'll have to find out the event. That'll be cool to have, as it will probably suit the target audience for these devices, which are folks who probably use these devices on the go, and they're kind of walking around with the tablets. And so, I mean, and I'd say it'd probably be come in handy for podcasters, because, you know, you can kind of it has a full USB port, and you can sort of and USB-C, I believe. You can sort of move it around and sort of set your whole kit up, and you record the podcast from anywhere. And it runs Windows, at least. Microsoft Windows. I said Microsoft Windows. You get what I'm talking about. It runs Windows 11. So it'd probably be good for podcast producers or fellow podcasters like myself. I mean, there's the iPad Pro, but then again, nothing beats having Windows, if you know what I mean. So we'll see how these surfaces shape out, you know. It must be interesting, to say the least. Bluetooth headphones and earbuds are growing in popularity, easy to use in general if you look at it from that point of view, but they don't offer the full soundstage or high-res audio quality that wired headphones earbuds offer. But now things are changing, obviously. Qualcomm has launched a new, brand new Bluetooth audio codec called aptX Lossless. This is like a step up from regular aptX and aptX. This was a second one that I almost forgot. I think it was adaptive, I believe. But this is the top of the line sort of aptX codec. It's the first of its kind, you could say. But the deal here is that it's a broad codec that should work with a wide range of devices and apps without the need of additional software. To start with, the maximum bandwidth for this new audio codec is approximately 1 megabyte per second, which is a big step up from regular aptX codec, which caps out at 352 kilobits per second. So that's like more than double the bandwidth that you'll get. It's able to squeeze in more quality audio and able to hear more, essentially. On top of that, aptX Lossless has lossless compression right straight in there, which helps fit in CD quality audio running at roughly 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz resolution, or 44.1 kilohertz 16-bit resolution. So again, a bit of a step up from regular Bluetooth audio, where you might hear some crackling or some buzzing noise in the back or anything like that. That could be annoying, to say the least. Pretty cool, to say the least, though. To get aptX Lossless, though, you will need a device and a pair of headphones, earbuds that supports the codec as it is, but hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, it should be available on a broad range of audio gear and devices, and as I said, you know, and the streaming apps should support it, and players should support it down the road. But why are we getting lossless now? I mean, they should have offered it years ago. All the big music streaming apps in general these days, everyone from Apple Music down to Tidal to Spotify, offer hi-fi or lossless streaming, so you could stream albums and singles in at a very high resolution, with Apple, for example, offering the lossless option as standard for all their subscribers, which shows there's a growing market for high-res sound. How much of an improvement is it from regular codecs? It really depends, as sound quality really is subjective from person to person and can vary dramatically. So we'll have to see how this pans out for sure. Samsung is about to drop its newest affordable flagship phone, the Galaxy S21 Fan Edition, the reasonably priced offering to the S21 series. We've heard a lot about how it's been delayed for so many months owing to the current chip shortages. Now we're hearing, according to Front Page Tech, John Prosser, obviously, good old John Prosser, he's saying that the S21 FE would go on sale on October 28th. It's not the exact date, to say the least, but it's almost, it sounds reasonable. It can happen. It's not too good to be true, but it can happen for sure. It may not be the exact date, but it's almost certain, to say the least. But that's not the only bit of leaked information we're getting. Sam Mobile, the big Samsung sort of mobile blog, has obtained a leaked PDF user manual of the phone, and it almost confirms a lot of specs that we've been hearing about and we've kind of been knowing ever since we've started to hear murmurs of the S21 FE. To start with, and the most disappointing of them all, and yeah, I mean, it's a big deal for those who are buying a phone at a price of around $800 to about $1,000. There's no SD card slot on the S21 FE. I'm going to say it right there. It literally in the manual. There's no mention of the SD card slot, which is a bit annoying, but you get some things in return. You have IP68 water and dust resistance, an ultrasonic fingerprint sensor, because they showed a sort of a graphic of the phone on the front and the back. See what you're getting on both. So we are getting an ultrasonic fingerprint sensor built in. So it's coming from the S21 regular. High refresh rate displays, 90 or 120 hertz AMOLED displays probably. Wireless charging, both regular and reverse. Wireless DeX support, not a big deal. It runs over Wi-Fi. It's what Miracast is, but instead you have a DeX mode completely on your screen. And much, much more. You have three cameras on the back. We don't know what they are, but they're certainly happening, as we're seeing triple camera setups on Galaxy A series phones. Oh, this is going to be a bit of a doozy, but you won't be getting a headphone jack or a USB charger in the box. And a bit of a moment of silence for those who are thinking that we would get those features on a reasonable smartphone. Is it me, or they're kind of starting to act like a certain fruit brand? A certain fruit, that's known for doing such corner cutting to bolster accessory sales. Hey, I'm reading too much into this. Some folks, I mean, we don't know, honestly. I mean, I'm just reading too much into it. Probably it could happen. Yeah, they might be doing that. They want to make people buy their certified official accessories. Hopefully there should be a USB-C to a headphone jack dongle in the box that you can get. And that would probably be helpful, to say the least. But at this point, you're probably going to have some accessories that'll let you get around the issue of no headphone jack, or honestly, no charger in the box, probably. I mean, if you look hard enough, though. But again, it'd be lovely to have a charger in the box. It cuts out the uncertainty of using dodgy-ass chargers that you get from, from a mobile shop, and they burst and, fry your plug sockets. That's a real problem, guys. And I think that's why people would love to see. There's the environmental issue, but frankly, I think people would love to have a USB charger in the box. There's that certainty and reliability you get, but the fact that there are more Android phones increasingly that are not offering a charger in the box, there gotta be reliable options that you can get on the market, and we should think about it. Really, we should probably do a guide eventually down the road. I mean, I try to buy some box standard USB chargers that you can get on Amazon, that if you are searching a specific budget, and kind of test around and see which one actually charges your phone and doesn't fry it or fry your electricity supply in your home or fry your plug socket, as it may end up being. There are actual chargers that do that. Yeah, but aside from that, some folks are saying that there could be a Snapdragon or Exynos variant, which sounds pretty impossible if you know what it is. We'll have to see on the final specs, which we'll only know when Samsung does the final sort of does the launch event for the S21 FE in general. So we gotta wait and see in that sense, but shaping up to be an interesting phone, a good sequel to the S20 FE nonetheless. But it may not be as cheap as the S20 FE. I'm sensing it, that's for sure. Moving on, Samsung's camera division has shown off two new camera sensors, the ISOCELL HP1 and GN5. These sensors are massive. The ISOCELL HP1 is the industry's first 200 megapixel, and you're hearing it rightfully so, 200 megapixel smartphone camera sensor. Boy oh boy, we didn't think we were going to get to 200 megapixels in 2021. I thought this, we were like 3 years away. But hey, innovation happens very fast. So 200 megapixels, we're not far. I think it'd only be a matter of time until we see the first gigapixel phone sensor, camera sensor, by like 2030, given the speed of innovation. But oh well. So this sensor generally uses 0.64 micrometer sized pixels, as it's stated in the press release, along with chameleon cell technology, which offers 2x2, 4x4, just regularly full pixel binning depending on the environment. So for example, in a low light situation, the HP1 sensor will combine 16 neighboring pixels to give you a sharp 12.5 megapixel sensor combined giving you a pixel size of 2.56 micrometers. The ISOCELL HP1 can do 8K resolution video recording at 30 frames a second, thanks to this capability, where, again, combining 4 pixels to 1, so giving you 50 megapixels, so it'll let you record 8K video resolution without any issues. And then again, 200 megapixels, again, won't really dramatically mean that you have DSLR beating photos. You'll just get a sharper photo overall, and get to greater detail. It just adds more to the picture. It doesn't really improve details or highlights or anything like that. So that's something to keep in mind, you know. And on the other hand, you have the ISOCELL GN5, which is a new 50 megapixel camera sensor, smartphone camera sensor, mind you, which is the first 1 micrometer sensor to offer dual pixel pro and full deep trench isolation capability, which, according to Samsung, boosts autofocusing capabilities. So the FDTI bit in the GN5 Pro sensor creates a partial insulator within each sensor, each 1 micrometer sensor. So like a full sort of insulator between, and that means, and that covers all the areas of the minuscule sensor, which improves picture quality and autofocus performance. So for the average layman, it's a small tweak generally, but this should give you a decent quality improvement on photos. Now, the HP one should be coming to ultra high-end or high-end phones in that sense, like the S22 Ultra. I'm not counting on it, but it could happen. Who knows? It could happen, but I'm not counting on it. I mean, it could be on some crazy ultra high-end phone that, you know, most Yankees won't be able to buy for sure. Whereas on the flip side, we could see a GN5 sensor on even mid-range or affordable flagship devices, which I think is pretty cool. But generally, pretty cool innovation if you ask me in that sense. So in the last episode, we've talked about the Vivo X70 series in general. We've mentioned the specs of the X70 Pro Plus, the cameras potentially. It could be a monster of a high-end phone for what it is from Vivo, which is kind of known for making quite affordable mid-range phones with the same old MediaTek processors and God knows what kind of samey specs they offer. But for the high-end phones, they really bring a lot to the table. In fact, today they showed off their first image signaling processor, mind you, the ISP, not internet service provider, image signaling processor, the Vivo V1. This is the first chip that, according to the executive vice president Hu Baishan, hopefully I didn't pronounce his name horribly wrong, should optimize the viewfinder look and video recording functionality in general. It's pretty impressive. I mean, the fact that instead of using God knows in Qualcomm's own image signaling processor, which, don't get me wrong, is pretty good for what it is, but I'm sure that Vivo's like, oh shoot, we're probably going to use a whole bunch of processors on these cameras, and we might not get the high resolution image processing that we want. And I'm sure that's why they decided to make their own processor, and it's a lot of work, but for context, and this is the interesting part, the image signaling processor was made by an R&D team at Vivo of over 300 people, and took 24 months to design and sort of conceptualize and bring it to real life, sort of, which is impressive. I mean, I'm sure it's just how things are in China. It just works incredibly fast. They have a lot of resources. They've got the capabilities to do it. They've got the technology. But it's impressive given Vivo especially, and given that how cutthroat the smartphone industry can be, or the whole business model can be, especially for a brand like Vivo. I mean, it's pretty impressive that they're able to put the whole, they're able to bring a unique part to the table. We kind of do know that this will be on the X70 Pro Plus, but generally they didn't specify which phone will get it first in its press release, but it should come on an overall series of phones. We don't know really, but I am guessing that it'll probably be on a whole bunch of their, they're probably going to offer it on a whole bunch of their phones which have different processors in general, but they want crispy image processing and computational photography. So they're going to add this ISP to different phones with different processors, just so they control the camera experience and offer a better photography experience overall. But yeah, I mean, aside from this little quirk, the X70 Pro has been certified by China's TENAA. I don't know the full form of it, but it's their certifying body for electronic gear, like, you know, the US FCC, with almost full specs on the table. So it listed a 2.4 gigahertz processor, which means we either could be getting a Snapdragon 888 or an Exynos 1080, that was on the X60 pretty much, a 50 megapixel main sensor, two 12 megapixel sensors, the 8 megapixel sensor, which could be for telephoto probably, because there is like a fourth sensor for telephoto, not for zoom though. You have around 4,500 mAh typical battery, give or take, 8 or 12 gigabytes of RAM out of the gate, and three storage tiers that you can get on the phone. It were not mentioned on the listing, but if I were to guess, with 2020 hindsight, you could likely be 128, 256, or 512 gigabytes of storage, given the market trends we have in China and generally across the board. Honestly, we don't know much, like the regular X70, the price of all these phones, and just the whole specs in general, the camera, or which X70 models will have the ISP that Vivo has designed themselves. But that'll probably be for the launch event next week. Obviously, we'll talk about it on next Tuesday's episode, hopefully. So, if you want to subscribe to this podcast so that you don't miss next week's episodes, you know, we got a lot to talk about. The iPhone 13 is coming, so that's something to look forward to. We should know more about this phone and the other one next week, pretty much. So, that's that, pretty much, you know. And finally, Sony is doing an event on September the 9th, where they'll be showing some new PS5 games and I'm quoting this here, a look into the future of PS5. But what we'd love to know, and that's just me honestly, I don't know how if things have improved really, I'm sure it's a misconception at this point, a kind of a stereotypical thing, but what we would love to know is when will the PS5's limited supply run end, and when will it sort of start to offer generally, because honestly if you can't run out and get a PS5 because it sells out fast, all those new games that they're going to show off pretty much are useless if you think about it. But hey, unless you already have a PS5, that is, I mean, you're able to enjoy those games though, but it'd be lovely to get a PS5 easily. They have released a new SKU of the PS5 Digital Edition, and what I do know is Austin Evans made a video about the new spec PS5s, and what I do know is he kind of showed it off, and it was slightly lighter in it that the CPU component that you have, the cooler, if I'm saying it roughly, they sort of reduced the cooling air, the heat sink area, over the original Digital Edition PS5. It was kind of a wide area, whereas the newer variant, aside from having it and having quite an easier screw mount, it had like a smaller heat sink, so the whole console sort of heats up faster, which is a good or bad thing, but it probably might result in a quite degraded performance, probably. It might be good or it might be bad, depending on how you look at it. I think the bad part is that if they don't, it kind of sacrifice the cooling, it sort of would reduce the lifespan of something like the PS5, and it already has to run in a very high performance, and it would take a beating with that reduced thermals in that sense. So honestly, if you haven't watched Austin Evans' video on YouTube, I highly recommend that you do it, and I'll link it in the show notes in case you're curious, to say the least, you know. So it was kind of fascinating, nonetheless. Alrighty, it was surprised. I wrote this whole episode ironically, so I managed to pack it in under 25 or 26 minutes, but being a short episode, you know, that really was all that we had to cover. But what do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at @Sade_Mount99. Follow me there if you can. And honestly, it really does take a long time to make this podcast. It takes quite a lot of my brain power to do it. big brain energy to do it. So it'd be amazing if you'd subscribe to this podcast. So wherever you're listening right now, if you're on Apple, Spotify, Pocket Cast, wherever you are, really, go hit subscribe so you don't miss another episode and you're able to catch the next episode in your feed. Share to your friends and family if you can. Forward on WhatsApp. That'll be lovely. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy signing out. Take care. Have a great weekend. And yeah, thank you for listening. I mean, I don't have much to say really, but yeah. Stay safe. You know, if you haven't vaccinated, get vaccinated, all right? Stay safe. Ciao.